The crowds looked at John the Baptist like a group of house cats looking at a lion. He was kind of the same, but he was kind of different, and there was no doubt that he could be dangerous. John had a simple message: repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. It's a simple line. You could say it. You could go to Walmart and say it. You could go to Brookshire Brothers and say it. You could go into the middle of nowhere and say it. And chances are, if you did, nobody would care. Nobody would come and listen to you. Nobody would follow you around. Nobody would ask you how they should respond. But when John the Baptist said it, men quit their work, laid down their hammers halfway through their project, and walked out into the middle of nowhere. Women left their meals half-cooked, simmering on the fire, as they walked out into the desert. Little boys walked out of school halfway through lecture, got filthy dirty walking into the middle of nowhere to get into a line to be baptized. The Jewish people who'd been waiting for the Messiah and now see this character attracting people from all over, getting disciples, baptizing, start wondering in their minds, could he be the one? And before they can even verbalize their question, John responds, "Me? You've got to be kidding. I'm not even worthy to untie his shoes. Don't look for someone coming with water, but someone with fire." And then John gives his description of Jesus. And it's not Jesus the Good Shepherd, and it's not Jesus the Great Physician. It's Jesus the Judicial Farmer. When John introduces Jesus, it's not an image of the perfect Fabio hair and the bleached and pressed robe. It's hands covered in calluses wrapped around a pitchfork. Think Carhartt overalls and boots instead. He's coming to the threshing floor. His winnowing fork is in his hand to separate the wheat from the chaff. It was a job back then everybody was familiar with. A threshing floor was usually on top of a hill. It'd be a spot where the harvest would be brought in and piled up, and the farmer would come with a pitchfork and throw it in load by load into the air. The chaff or straw would be blown away downhill and then would be gathered up to be burnt. But the wheat would fall, stay close to the farmer, and then be gathered up and stored in the barn. The Jewish people hearing John say this knew what he was talking about because they knew their Bible and they knew their history. In 1 Chronicles, we hear, "King David said to Ornan, 'No, I will buy them for the full price. I will not take for the Lord what is yours, nor offer burnt offerings that cost me nothing.' So David paid Ornan 600 shekels of gold by weight for the site. David built there an altar to the Lord and presented burnt offerings and offerings of well-being. He called upon the Lord, and he answered him with fire from heaven on the altar of burnt offering. Then the Lord commanded the angel, and he put his sword back into its sheath. At that time, when David saw that the Lord had answered him at the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite, he made his sacrifices there. And then in 2 Chronicles, we hear, Solomon began to build the house of the Lord in Jerusalem on Mount Moriah, where the Lord had appeared to his father David, at the place that David had designated on the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. So if I didn't lose you when I said Chronicles, how it went was there was a hill that was used as a threshing floor. David bought it. God sent fire from heaven to the site. And David used it not for separating wheat from the chaff, but for offering burnt offerings to the Lord. When his son, King Solomon, got to build the temple, he built it on that site. The temple stood on a threshing floor. The temple today stands on what used to be a threshing floor that King David bought, that God sent fire from heaven to, where Solomon built the temple. When John introduces Jesus, a descendant of King David, he describes him as the farmer coming to the threshing field, who's finally going to separate the wheat from the chaff, who's going to use the threshing floor the way it was meant to be from the beginning of time. A lot of times when your life is confusing, you'll say it just feels like everything's up in the air. And it doesn't feel fun when your life is up in the air, or the life of your family is up in the air, or you watch the news and it feels like everything's up in the air. But when you stick to John's description of Jesus, you find that the entire point of your life is to be thrown up in the air, to see what you're made of. What are you? Are you wheat? Or are you chaff? The trials of life, then, are not our enemies, but they are opportunities to find out what we are. And John wasn't the man sitting in silk pajamas on a comfortable couch talking like this. He was the one in the wilderness, bee stings on his forearm from eating wild honey, bug legs in his teeth. And then he goes from prophet to prisoner because he had a problem with Herod's definition of marriage, that it was okay to marry his brother's wife, and didn't change his message and was off to prison. But before that happens, Jesus is baptized. And the way it's worded is fascinating. Now, when all the people were baptized, and when Jesus also had been baptized, it's a parenthetical for the grammar nerds, when Jesus also had been baptized, you get the sense that John is just working his way through the line, and suddenly Jesus turns up. A lot of you have had moments or days like that. You were just going through your life, going through day, and it seemed as if Jesus turned up and everything changed. But this isn't one of those little God winks or even a solid nudge of the elbow. This is God giving humanity the best opportunity they have. When Jesus walks up to the water to be baptized, he gives people the best shot that they can ever be given at following Jesus. This isn't tracing some subtle prophecy in Chronicles. This is God tearing open the heavens, like someone opening the curtains in a dark room. And God speaking from heaven to earth, "This is my son, my beloved. With you I am well pleased." Jesus was 30 years old when he was baptized. And that was old back then. The life expectancy for a male in Jesus' day was 26. That number is really low, partly because of a high rate of infant mortality. If you made it to age 10, you had a pretty good chance of making it another 37 years. So adult males in Jesus' day, we're hoping to live to around 47. The requisite age for a rabbi to take on disciples was the ripe old age of 30. Jesus had lived most of his life before starting his ministry. 30 then was what, 60 now? And Jesus spent his latter years not buying a camper, moving to Florida, but saving the world from their sins. A reminder to any of you who are over 60 that this could be the most productive time of your life for God's kingdom. Jesus lived a life that pleased his Father. He's old enough to take on disciples. And when it's time for him to give his first sermon, to start preaching, people were ready to listen to what he was going to say. The heavens were torn open. God spoke from the heavens and said, "This is my son, listen to him." People are going to listen to what Jesus has to say. And what does he say? How does he begin speaking? I love it that Jesus' first line is a quote from the crazy old guy who baptized him. In Matthew 3:2, it says, "John had preached, 'Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand.'" And in Matthew 4:17, Jesus begins his ministry preaching, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand." Our lives are a brief moment. When we are thrown up into the air, each of us needs our worldly desires of the flesh blown away. The breath of the farmer encourages us. The wind of the world blows on us from every direction. We can follow where the world blows and find ourselves in the fire. Or we may obey the words of the farmer and find ourselves cleansed, cared for, and brought into the barn. And if we do, we will not be bitter about being tossed to and fro, We will not be whining about the trials we went through. But we will be grateful for the farmer, for finally, at long last, carrying us home.